tuning in to the Next Level Church podcast. For more information, check out our website at nextlevelchurch.net.
I absolutely love Christmas. I think it is the most wonderful time of the year. In fact, I love Christmas so much that the day after Halloween, I set up my Christmas tree. Now, I know I'm being judged by a lot of you in here. I know that there's some of you just hold to this truth that you cannot celebrate Christmas until after Thanksgiving. And I get that. I know there's not much that I can do to convince you otherwise. I just would like to throw out this idea, though, that all great ideas got crucified by the mass public before they became common. And so I view myself as a Christmas trailblazer. I like to think that if Hallmark can start showing Christmas movies in October, then I can put my tree up the 1st of November. Now, I know, that is like, it's just awful for some of you. Some of you want to leave this place right now and never come back because of what I just did. But there has been some medical research that has actually shown that there is a link between the condition of someone's heart and their ability to celebrate Christmas before Thanksgiving. If you push back and are not able to celebrate Christmas, there's actually an x-ray. This is a professional medical x-ray of the condition of your heart. It shows that if you cannot celebrate Christmas before Thanksgiving, you just have a heart that's two sizes too small. In fact, if you zoom out, this is an image of what you look like when you put down me celebrating Christmas early. Here's the thing, though. No matter what I say, there's going to be some of you who just will not be convinced. There's no argument I can make. There's nothing I can do to twist your arm. It's just so deep-seated in you that you do not celebrate Christmas until after Thanksgiving. And I get that. It is hard to change someone's opinion. It's hard to convince someone of something new. And it makes me think of the early Christians. The earliest Christians in the world had their job, a really difficult job set out for them. The earliest Christians, their whole message was, let me tell you about a guy that you can't see, but we've seen him. And God sent him to die on a cross. But wait, he didn't stay dead. He rose again. That's a hard sell. Like, a lot of faiths promise you something, and they say something, and it's like an easy sell. You know, if you just do this, then you get a place in paradise. But this is a really hard sell. You've got to believe, in order to be a Christian, you've got to believe that God sent his son to die. That's a really difficult sell. And the earliest Christians, they had their work cut out for them, but they did an amazing job of trying to help convince people that Jesus was who he said he was. And I love what they did because they did it two different ways. Number one is they believed that they could convince people relationally. In the early church, one of their whole goals and one of their main things was just to love people well. In fact, they loved people so well that it was observed by the Roman Empire that one of the main reasons why they couldn't snuff out and stop Christianity was because they loved each other so well. Literally, the Roman government said, we don't like this Jesus guy. We don't like the people are saying he's king. Let's kill all the Christians. And they would persecute the Christians and literally were trying to snuff out this movement called Christianity. And the more they pressed, the more Christianity spread. And the Roman Empire said, it just doesn't make any sense. We push them and they just love each other so well. And that love is what helps spread the message of Christianity. But the early Christians weren't just a bunch of hippies who were just like always talking about peace, love, and understanding. They also wanted to have an academic approach to convincing people, helping people understand who Jesus was. And one of those guys is a guy by the name of Matthew. He was one of Jesus' 12 disciples, and he writes a letter of all the things that he had seen happen in his life hanging out with Jesus. Now, when Matthew starts off his letter, it is the beginning of the very New Testament. It starts off, right, it goes from the Old Testament, 400 years past, and then we get the New Testament. And this is like an exciting thing. Like, you're now entering into a new day and age, and Matthew is getting ready to try to convince people that Jesus is who he said he is. And this is like, I would be anticipating that he would have this amazing opener, that he would try to capture our attentions. But if you've ever decided, you know what, I'm going to read the Bible. I've never read it for myself. I'm just going to dive in and read the Bible. Let me start with Matthew. If you've ever done that, then you've been disappointed with the beginning of the New Testament. It is one of the most boring and awful ways to start a book. Matthew starts off his whole gospel, his whole everything about Jesus, with a lineage of people in Jesus' family. So-and-so begot, so-and-so begot, so-and-so. It is awful to read. It is boring. It is not setting this up for, hey, keep reading. This is going to get good. It is like, I don't want to read anymore. Like, why would you start off a book with a boring introduction of the lineage of Jesus? If I was Matthew, I would have started things off in a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. That's the way you start off a story. I'm drawn in by that intro. I am not drawn in by this lineage. And forever, it was so confusing to me. Why would Matthew start off with this boring lineage? And it's not until that you understand who's Matthew's audience is that you understand the significance of why he started this thing off with the lineage. The Jewish people at the time, they were the ones that Matthew was trying to convince that Jesus was who he said he was. And the Jewish people had this understanding that when the Messiah comes, he will fulfill 61 prophecies from the Old Testament. In order to fulfill all 61 prophecies, it can't be a mistake. No one is just going to stumble upon and accidentally fulfill all 61 prophecies. This is something that would take a miracle for one human being to actually fulfill. There are prophecies in the Old Testament. They say things about this upcoming Messiah. They say things like, he will be betrayed for 30 pieces of silver. That's incredibly specific. And Jesus is betrayed for 30 pieces of silver. It says that he'll ride into his kingdom on a donkey, not on a horse. And Jesus rides into the kingdom on a donkey. It says that the Messiah will be born of a virgin. Jesus claimed he was born from a virgin. It says the Messiah will come from a place called Bethlehem. And because of crazy circumstances, Jesus ends up being born in Bethlehem. Matthew is systematically saying, I am going to take every argument that you have about who this Messiah is, and I'm going to check it off the list. You say the Messiah has to be this? Check, check, check. And the Jewish people, they held to very strongly that the Messiah had to come from the lineage of King David. It was a stopping point. If someone were to come up and say, hey, I'm the Messiah, they would check their family tree and say, oh, nope, you're not from King David. You don't match the criteria. This was such a big deal to the Jewish people that Matthew decides to start off his whole gospel proving that Jesus is the Messiah. And he's writing to Jewish people who need to know that the Messiah is coming from the lineage of David. So with that understanding, when you read the beginning of Matthew, it starts to come to life because he's trying to prove a point systematically. And what I want to do is I want to read a section of this normally boring genealogy, and we're going to break it down to see some exciting stuff in Jesus' life. And at Next Level Church, we stand to honor the text. And I want to invite you to stand to your feet. And I want to give it a little disclaimer before we read. The disclaimer is that we are about to read some names that none of us know for sure how to pronounce them. We're all going to butcher them, and it's okay. They're dead. They won't get offended. So just say it with confidence as best you can. We're going to all butcher these names together. Would you read nice and loud with me? Matthew 1, 5 through 6 says, Salmon, the father of Boaz, whose mother was Rahab. Boaz, the father of Obed, whose mother was Ruth. Obed, the father of Jesse. And Jesse, the father of King David. Now that we've read the text, would you go to God in prayer? I want to invite you to talk to God. Maybe you've never talked to God. Maybe it's been a while since you've talked to God. Maybe you don't know what to say. And if you don't know what to say, I would invite you to say a simple prayer. Would you just pray, God, would you speak to my heart? And would you give me the courage to do whatever you tell me to do? You spend a few seconds just talking to God. God, we come before you right now, and we so often have our own thoughts and our own schedules, our own junk that we bring in here, and we just ask that you would just quiet our brains, that you would quiet our hearts, and that you would soften our hearts and our minds so that we could hear clearly from you. We ask no matter where we're at in life, God, that you would speak to our hearts today. And would you give us the courage to do whatever you tell us to do? God, I ask that the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart will be acceptable in your sight. Oh, Lord, you are my rock and my redeemer. In Jesus' name, amen. You may be seated. So today we're kicking off a brand new series entitled The Hidden Figures of Christmas. And what we're going to do is we are going to break down this lineage that Matthew gives at the very beginning of his gospel that points out all the family members that lead up to Jesus. This is the story behind the story. This is the backstory. This is the prequel. If you're a Star Wars fan, I hope that it's better than those prequels. This is in order for you to really understand what a miracle it was for Jesus to be born, you need to understand the family in which he came from. Now, one of the things that we're going to notice over the next few weeks is that the family that Jesus comes from is incredibly dysfunctional. If you come from a dysfunctional family, there is hope. Your family might produce someone like Jesus. Like, there, just because there's some drama, just because there's some issue, just because there's some scandal, doesn't mean that it's the end for your family. Great things can come out of dysfunctional families, and we're going to see that in our text that we read together. It lists some crazy names, but there's one name that I want us to focus on. It is a name that should not be included in Matthew's list. It is the name Rahab. Now, if you grew up in church, you might be familiar with Rahab. Maybe you learned about her in Sunday school. Maybe you remember sermons about Rahab. But Rahab is an incredibly scandalous person to be included in the lineage of Jesus. And I actually think that this is somewhat important. Because if I was writing a book and I was trying to lie to people, I would keep out all the scandalous stuff. I would just put in the good stuff to try to convince people this is the best thing. But Matthew starts off his letter writing about a bunch of dysfunctional, broken people that lead to Jesus. And he mentions this woman named Rahab. Now, in order for us to understand and get to Rahab's story, we have to rewind hundreds of years earlier to a book of Joshua. It's in the Old Testament, and it tells us how Rahab comes on the scene. And this is the hidden figure of Christmas that I am convinced when you understand Rahab's story and the part that she plays in Jesus' life, it will unlock the way that you see Christmas this year. I want to dive all the way back into Joshua 2, verse 1. It's going to come on the screens, or you can follow along in YouVersion. This is the story of Rahab. It starts off and it says, "Then Joshua, son of Nun." I want to stop there just for a second. Who is Joshua? Well, Joshua was the follower of Moses. Moses was the top dog in God's chosen people, the Israelites. God tells Moses to deliver the Israelites out of Egypt. Moses delivers the Israelites out of Egypt. They get to the place where God says, this is the promised land, but the Israelites are afraid, and so they don't enter the promised land. And because of their unbelief, they wander around the desert for 40 years. The promised land is on the other side. They can see it, but they wander around for 40 years, not entering the promised land. Moses dies, and his heir apparent, his Padawan, the guy that comes after him, is a guy named Joshua. This is where our text picks up. So Joshua, son of Nun, he secretly sent two spies from... Kaka poo poo. That's a pastor edit there. He sent them to go look over the land. He said, especially Jericho. So they went and entered the house of a prostitute named Rahab, and they stayed there. Now, before we go on the text, I want to highlight two things that I think are pretty significant from this text. Number one, Joshua sends two spies from a land that is literally called Kakapupu, but worse. And he sends them from there to get to the promised land. And the interesting thing about this is they all can see the promised land. They've been wandering in this awful land. They've been wandering in the desert. They've been wandering in a wasteland when the promised land is just out for them to reach. The reason they didn't get to the promised land, though, is because they had to overcome some obstacles. And they were so afraid of overcoming obstacles that they ended up being stuck in the desert. And I want to just tell you, this is a rabbit trail. This is just for free. This is a little side note. So often, God's people want God to hand them miracles, and we're not willing to do anything ourselves. We think life should be easy. We think if it's of God, then everything should just line up, and I never have to work. I never have to do anything about it. But I just wanted you to get this. The blessings of God are often wrapped in obstacles. And so often, the promise of God in the promised land is through an obstacle. You got to walk through poo to get to the promised land. And literally, Joshua sends the spies through a land, says, go from here to the promised land. And I'm telling you that today, if you're here, there is a promised land for you. But it's not always easy. And in order to get where God wants you to go, sometimes you have to walk through some obstacles. But the scripture tells us that no weapon formed against us shall prosper. That is that no obstacle can stand in your way. No obstacle can stop you. Greater is he that is in you than he that is in the world. You have everything you need to get to where God is sending you, but you can't allow the obstacles of life to stop you, because the obstacles will make you wander around the desert for 40 years saying, God, where are you? And God's on the other side of this. He's waiting in the promised land. The second thing that I want to point out and highlight to you is that these spies enter Jericho, and it says they went and entered the house of a prostitute named Rahab. Now, what is the occupation of Rahab? It tells it to us right off the bat. She is a what? Prostitute. This is scandalous. This is scandalous for a couple reasons. Number one, for a Jewish person and their day and age, they believe that prostitution was penalized literally by death. That if someone were to be found, if a woman were to be found in prostitution, then the penalty for that is death. So this is not like, oh, you know, that's kind of a little sin. That's not really a big deal. This is like an awful big deal to them. Not only that, the Jewish people had a belief and an understanding that they were to be separate from the world. And in order to be separate from the world, you could have nothing to do with someone who wasn't Jewish. In fact, they had a law that said a Jewish person couldn't even enter the house of someone that wasn't Jewish because you would get their non-Jewishness on you. And so they wouldn't even walk into the house. And here we have two God-fearing Jews, Jewish men who are spies. They enter the land, and what do? They go to a prostitute's house. They are breaking laws left and right. This is scandalous. Now, we don't know everything about this prostitute's house. There have been some kind of arguments and cases about where is it that Rahab lives. Some scholars say that it's a mistranslation, that she wasn't actually a prostitute, she was more of an innkeeper. Now, I don't like that translation. I don't think there's a lot of merit for that. In fact, I think a lot of times we as Christians, we like to polish up things and try to make things better than they really are because we don't like it when people of God have some struggle to them. And so I think that is a polished up thing. I don't think that she was just an innkeeper. I went to some of the Jewish rabbinical literature to try to figure out what do they say, because they're the ones that she came out of their family, and what do they say about Rahab? And one of the Jewish rabbis, a Jewish scholar, he said that it wasn't just an inn, and she wasn't just a prostitute, that most likely Rahab ran a brothel. This gets even more scandalous. The rabbi goes on to say, though, that if you were looking for information, the best place to go would actually be a brothel, because brothels back then were kind of like bars today. And when people are at bars, they just do a lot of talking. And the spies were trying to find information quickly about the place they were about to take over. So of course they would go to the place where everyone is talking. They went to Rahab's house. So it makes a little bit of sense. They went to find some information. Now let's keep reading with that understanding. Joshua 2:2-3. It says, the king of Jericho was told, look, some of the Israelites have come here tonight to spy out the land. So the king of Jericho sent this message to Rahab. Bring out the men who came to you and entered your house because they have come to spy out the whole land. Now, what I want to point out is that these are spies who get caught within the first paragraph of learning about. These are the worst spies in the history of spies. Like, I have this just mental image of these spies that they are wearing costumes that they think are going to fool everyone, but they're not fooling anyone. Like, I have this picture in my mind, just stick with me on this one. I have this picture in my mind of the 1990s Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. When they would go out in public, they would wear a trench coat and a fedora. I want to show you an image of that. That's not fooling anyone. You look like a giant turtle in a trench coat. And this is how I picture the spies. They're walking in disguise. No one's going to know who we are. And everyone's like, those guys don't belong. Danger, stranger. They literally get found out at the very beginning. And word comes back to the king that some Israelite spies have come to learn about the whole land. And the king goes to Rahab and says, hey, Rahab, I know there's spies in there. Send them out so we can kill them. And Rahab lies. Now, first of all, don't judge her. She's already a prostitute, so we can't expect her to live this great moral life. But this lie, I want to just hang out here just for a second, because lying is wrong. You should not lie. Lying is a sin. But this is considered an ethical dilemma. This is considered an ethical or a moral lie. This would go in the category, the same thing happened in Nazi Germany when the Germans were persecuting and killing Jews. Many Germans hid Jewish people in their house, and they lied about it. They said, there's no Jews here. There's no Jews hiding here. And we would look at that and say, for the greater good, to save someone's life, that lie was acceptable. And that's what's going on here. Rahab's not lying. Like she's not saying, yeah, you don't look fat in those jeans. She's not telling like a lie that is like a white lie. She's telling a lie for a greater good, to protect these guys that are in her house. So the spies are hanging out at her house. She sends away the king's men. She says, hey, they've already left, but they haven't left. They're hanging out upstairs at the roof of her house. And that's where our text picks up. Would you read on the screens with me Joshua 2, 8 through 11? You can follow along. It says, "Before the spies lay down for the night, she went up on the roof and said to them, 'I know that the Lord has given you this land and that a great fear of you has fallen on us, so that all who live in this country are melting in fear because of you. We've heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea for you when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to Shiloh and Og, the two kings of the Amorites east of the Jordan, whom you completely destroyed. When we heard of it, our hearts melted in fear, and everyone's courage failed because of you. For the Lord your God is God in heaven, above, and on earth, below.'" Now, the text doesn't tell us how Rahab heard about all these things, but I want to point out to you that Rahab quotes 40 years of history from the Israelites. Now, this is significant because back then they didn't have Facebook, they didn't have Twitter, they didn't have newspapers. There was no way for news to travel across the country. And Jericho was a city that was separated by everyone by a giant wall. And so in order for news to get into the walls of Jericho, someone had to walk in who had seen it or experienced it, and someone over 40 years had to share the story with Rahab. Well, I was reading some rabbinical literature about Rahab, and they shared some insight. Now, there's no way to know, because the text doesn't say this, there's no way to know if their insight is right, but their insight is passed down from generation to generation of who Rahab is. And according to one rabbinical legend, it says that Rahab was 10 years old when the Israelites came out of Egypt. Put that in your mind just for a second. A 10-year-old girl, when the Israelites leave Egypt and people start talking about it, she goes into business. And just keep it in your mind. What is her job? At 10 years old, she pursued her immoral calling during the 40 years that the Israelites were wandering in the wilderness. There was not a prince nor a ruler that had not had relations with her. And she was therefore well informed in what was going on outside of Jericho. So let me catch up to speed in case you missed what's happening. That according to Jewish legend, the reason that Rahab knew all the stories of God's people is because she was a prostitute. And when people would come visit Jericho, they would have relations with her, and they would start talking about, "Hey, I got to tell you about these Israelite people. They worship this God, and he's doing these crazy things. They were fleeing from Egypt, and the waters parted, and they walked on dry land, and then the waters crashed down, and it wiped out the whole Egyptian army. And you won't believe it. I saw it with my own eyes. This is crazy. Let me tell you about it." And for 40 years, Rahab learned the stories of God's people. So now she's in a place where she's actually standing face to face with two people who are from God. God's people, and she says to them, "Your God, your Lord, is the God of heaven." I want to just camp out here just for a second, because I think that it is incredibly significant that the reputation of God preceded his people. And if you're here today and you're new to Next Level Church, there's a great chance that you're here because you had a friend or a family member where God started doing something in their life and you wanted to know a little bit more about it. In fact, some of you, maybe you came because you saw they invited you to their baptism and you came here and you were like, "Okay, there's something going on. Yeah, they're not perfect, but there's something different." And how you're here today because of the reputation of someone in your life who said, "Hey, God's doing something in me." And I just want to say that I hope that Next Level is forever a place that is safe for outsiders to come learn about God. How cool would it be if God leads a family member or a friend in your life who says, "You know what? I want to know more about this thing that's going on in your life. Can I come to church with you? Can I come experience it?" Rahab literally is hearing about the amazing things of God before she meets anyone that actually believes in this God. But if you are a Christian here today, I want to speak to you just for a second. I think that it would be absolutely amazing if the reputation of what God was doing in your life preceded you wherever you went. How cool would it be if you were in the grocery store and you run into someone and you meet them for the first time and you just start talking and the name Next Level comes up and they say, "Oh, I've heard of that place. Those people over there, they're kind of crazy for Jesus. I've heard of the things they're doing in the community. I've heard of the difference that they've made. I don't believe in your God, but can I come check that out? Because I keep hearing about what God is doing through his people." How amazing would that be if the reputation of God preceded you everywhere you went? I think it would be amazing if people, before they even knew your name, if they found out where you went, it was like, "Yep, I know God's doing something in those people's lives." Following Jesus is not always easy, and following Jesus doesn't mean that we're perfect, but following Jesus should lead to having a reputation of God doing something in his people's lives. This Christmas, we are going to continue on a tradition that we started 5 years ago. And you may have heard it mentioned in the top three. It is a scary tradition. And it, as we grow as a church, it becomes even more scary. The tradition started with, in year one, we wanted to be a church that was a blessing to other people. And Christmas is one of the services where the most people come to church, especially people that don't normally go to church. And one of the big turnoffs for people that don't normally go to church is when a pastor gets up and asks them for money. And it's a big hang-up, and people say, I don't go to church because they just want my money. And so from day one as a church, we said, on our one of our biggest holiday services, we're not going to ask them to give us money. We're going to tell them that we're going to give all the money away. Every cent that we get on Christmas Eve, we give it away. We find someone that we can partner with, and we try to be a blessing to them. And this year, on Christmas Eve, we are partnering with a great organization. It's the organization that we're actually going to Haiti with this coming June. And this organization has told us they have a need, that they want to build an orphanage for $10,000. And we said, hey, we'll try to help meet that need. In order to do that, though, on one of our biggest holiday services of the year, we're saying every cent that we bring into the service, we're giving away. That's crazy. Because we could use that money. There's projects and things that we want to do. There's staff we want to hire. There's staff we want to pay better. There's stuff we could do with that money. But I want us to have a reputation in the community that says these people actually trust God. And we don't get everything that goes on over there. We don't understand it. We may not even believe in it all. But you are a crazy people for God. You actually live for him. You actually do things. We've heard about marriages who have been restored. We've heard about teenagers who have come back home. We've heard about people's lives who have been changed through what God is doing. And how amazing would it be if we were a people that were so serious about God that the reputation of God spreads. Not the reputation of Next Level Church. The reputation of God spreads all throughout the community. How amazing would that be? So that when you meet someone who hasn't lived a life for God, they say, oh, I've heard about those stories. I've heard about those people. Rahab, for 40 years, has been hearing about the stories of God. And she meets someone that actually represents him, and she says, I believe that your God is God. But Rahab had a reputation. And this is something she had to overcome because the people that she wanted to become a part of, the people she wanted to join, they had this thing against prostitutes. So she went into this whole relationship having a scarlet letter on her. She went into it having some judgment. And the text over and over again, it says that Rahab the prostitute, or the prostitute Rahab, everywhere she went, her reputation carried along with her. Rahab had a reputation before Taylor Swift had a reputation. She had a big reputation, ah. Only four of you have listened to Taylor Swift's new album. Here's our big idea, though, and this is what I want you to wrestle with and think about. The big idea is a lasting reputation is created by repetition. A lasting reputation is created by repetition. Rahab, the reason she is known as Rahab the prostitute is because this wasn't a one-time sin. This wasn't a one-time thing. This is who she was. By the repetition of her job, she got a reputation. And everyone knew, Rahab the prostitute. That's her reputation. She just did the same thing over and over again. And if you have a reputation, it's because you've repeated something over and over again. A one-time act doesn't lead to a reputation. Someone may say that about you, but if you keep living a good life, if you keep living for God, eventually that bad reputation will go away. A reputation that follows you is because you are consistently repeating the same behavior over and over and over again. And some of you have a reputation that follows you into places that you go. For some of you, maybe your reputation is, this is just a person who loses their temper. This is a person who has anger issues. And you say, I want to change. You say, I'm going to make a difference. I'm not going to do it anymore. But then every relationship you get in, your anger comes up. And everyone's like, yep, see, we told you. Or maybe you're a person who your reputation is that you just leave. When relationships get tough, you say, I'm out of here. I can't deal with it. And so you jump from one relationship to the next, and after you get into a relationship, things start to get rocky, you leave, everyone says, yep, see, there they did it again. Or maybe your reputation follows you that you're a person of drama. You just love drama. You're addicted to the drama. Everywhere you go, you bring drama with you. And so when life starts to get hectic, people say, yep, look, there he is in the middle of the drama again. Maybe your reputation is that you're not very serious about God. Maybe your reputation is that you have an addiction. Maybe your reputation is that you do some things that are the cause of the breakup of your family. And that reputation has followed you, and you can't kick that reputation, and you keep saying, I'm going to change, I'm going to make a difference, I'm going to do something different, but no matter where you go, that reputation follows you. Why? Because reputations are built off repetition. And Rahab has a reputation. But I want to show you what happens in the text. Let's keep reading in Joshua 6, 22 through 23. It says, Joshua said to the two men who had spied out the land, go into the prostitute's house and bring her out and all who belong to her in accordance with your oath to her. So the young men who had done the spying went in and brought Rahab, her father and mother, her brothers and sisters, and all who belonged to her. They brought out her entire family and put them in a place outside the camp of Israel. Now, why is this significant? This is significant because this is happening in the middle of one of the most amazing miracles that's ever happened on this world. God's people, the Israelites, are told to go take over Jericho. And God tells them, here's the plan. What I want you to do is I want you to march around the city for 7 days. And on the seventh day, I want you to march around the city 7 times. And when I give you the signal, I want you to blow your trumpets and yell. And the walls will come falling down. That is the dumbest military plan in the history of plans. But the Israelites actually obey God. This is one of the times where they're like, okay, we'll trust you. And the Israelites go and they march around this city. On the seventh day, they march around it 7 times. And then they blow their trumpets. And then they yell. And then the walls come down. And it was amazing. And it's a miracle. Science does not explain how you can yell walls down. The only thing that explains this is that God was in the yelling and in the trumpet playing. And this amazing miracle happens, and the Israelites run in, and they're able to take over Jericho. It's this phenomenal miracle, and yet in the midst of it, the text tells us, hey, we can't forget about Rahab. Rahab the prostitute. Because Rahab the prostitute, she hid the spies, and they made an oath with her that they were going to spare her life. And so they take Rahab out of the city of Jericho, and they put her on the outskirts of the Israelites. I want to show you, though, what happens next, because it is so significant to the story of Rahab. If you'll keep reading with me in Joshua 6, 24 through 25, it says, then they burned the whole city and everything in it, but they put the silver and gold and the articles of bronze and iron into the treasury of the Lord's house. But Joshua spared Rahab the prostitute with her family and all who belonged to her, because she hid the men Joshua had sent as spies to Jericho. Now watch this next part. And she lives among the Israelites to this day. Now why is that significant? Well, because Rahab the prostitute, who was not Jewish, should not have been invited into the camp of the Jewish people. And Rahab the prostitute had spent maybe up to 50 years living the life of a prostitute. But then she says, I believe in your God. I'm going to come join your people. And I guarantee you that Rahab didn't say, I'm going to join your people and then have a perfect life. She made lots of mistakes. She made lots of failures. There was times where she had to blow it, but she ended up living amongst the people of God. And because she was consistent in following God, it changed her reputation. In fact, if you're taking notes, I'd encourage you to write this down. If you want a new reputation, you have to make a new decision. In life, we think that God is just going to snap his fingers and we're just going to be changed and we'll never struggle with anything again. But change happens by repetition, and repetition happens by a decision. And a decision could simply be, it's just your decision. Today, I'm going to start following God. Today, I'm not going to look at that anymore. Today, I'm not going to go there. Today, when I get upset, I'm going to handle that anger differently. It's just a simple decision. It's a decision to follow God. And in that decision, I wish I could tell you that you'll never make a mistake again, or you'll never go back to your old ways, or you'll never go back and say, oh, I blew it. But when you blow it, the decision is, hey, I know ultimately I don't want to be known as Rahab the prostitute. So I made a mistake, but I'm going to get back up and keep going, because my ultimate decision is to follow after God. And you never know what God will do through someone who makes a decision to continually follow after God. We think that our reputation is built on one decision. That is a lie. Your reputation is built off repetition. So if you fall and you make a mistake, get back up and keep walking after God, because that repetition will lead to a different reputation. And it starts with a decision. The question for you to ask is, who do you want to be? You have a reputation. Maybe it's Joe the loser. Maybe it's Susie the in debt up to her eyeballs. Maybe it's Frank the tank. I don't know what your reputation is. Maybe it's that you're a leaver. Maybe it's that you are not kind to people. Maybe it's that you're not generous. Maybe it's that you're incredibly selfish. I don't know what your reputation is, but who do you want to be? Who do you want to be? And Rahab decided that she wanted to be with God. And she made the decision that she was going to follow after God because she believed that he was the God of the heavens. She made a decision, and even after she made mistakes, even after she failed, even after she did really stupid things, she continued to follow after God. And the text says she still lived with the people up until this day. That is, she lived her whole life amongst the Jewish people. Now, why is this so significant? Because you fast forward a few hundred years. So far, everything in the text has told us it's Rahab the prostitute. That's her reputation. That's who they are. But you get to a few hundred years later, and Matthew says, hey, I want to systematically prove to you that Jesus is the Messiah. And by doing that, I'm going to share with you the lineage of Jesus. So let me give you some names. And you look, let's look at it again. Matthew 5, or 1, 5 through 6. It says, Solomon the father of Boaz, whose mother was Rahab. Did you notice what's missing? Her reputation didn't follow her. And when you give your life to God, it does not mean that you're perfect. It does not mean that you're never going to make a mistake again. It means that you constantly make a decision to follow after God. And when you constantly repetition, I'm going to get back up. I'm going to continue to do this. When you continue to believe that God loves you despite the fact that sometimes you don't love him back. When you believe and allow God to win you over and over again, you never know what God will do with your story. You never know. Rahab's story, it is all about her being a prostitute, but the end of her story is so much bigger than that. In fact, there's so much going on in this lineage of Jesus. It says, Solomon, the father of Boaz, whose mother was Rahab. Why is that significant to us? It's significant because Boaz marries Ruth. And who is Ruth? Ruth is someone that has no business being in the family of God. Ruth was not Jewish. But maybe Boaz fell in love with Ruth because he grew up in a household of Rahab and he saw how his mom, who was not Jewish, fell in love with God, and he had a heart for someone that could do the same thing. And literally, God is bringing in people that have no business in his family to bring on the Messiah. You never know what God will do in your life or in your family's life when you make a decision to follow God. So your reputation might be something right now, but when you die, who knows what God's going to do with your repetition. And maybe God will change the world through your family. So we have this lineage of Jesus, and it leads us to understand that Rahab went into the story as a prostitute, but she comes out the other end of the story. Her title has gone, and she is now known as the mother of kings. And Matthew systematically says that it's because of Rahab that we end up getting King David. So here's the win for today. This is what you can do with this. The win for today is, I'd like to lead you in a prayer. And this isn't a prayer for everyone. If you don't feel like you have a reputation, if God's not knocking on your heart, if you don't feel like this was for you, then that's fine. There's no pressure to do this at all. But if you're here today and you would say, you know what, I got some junk in my past. If you're here today and you'd say, man, I have some repetition that keeps leading me to the same choices, and I hate it, I don't want to be a part of that. If God has spoke to your heart, if he's knocked on the door of your heart, if he said anything to you, then this is a prayer for you. It's to start a new repetition by simply making a decision. So I want to pray this prayer, and I want to invite you to pray it quietly. For those of you that God speak in your heart, I want you to pray it quietly in your heart. The prayer is simply this: God, I believe that your love is more powerful than my reputation. I believe that Christ died to pay the penalty for the sin that my reputation represents. And I believe you are offering me a new reputation. Forgiven. Accepted. Loved. Today I declare that what you say about me is true. I am forgiven. I am accepted. I am loved. God, teach me to live my life in accordance with who you say that I am. In Jesus' name, amen.
We hope you've enjoyed and learned from today's podcast. If you'd like to connect with us further, you can check out our website at next.